Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Purpose Tune Podcast. The goal of my show is to create valuable content to broaden your knowledge, inspire you, and get you in the right mindset so that you can apply it in your own life to drive impact, generate meaning, and achieve your purpose. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Purpose Tune Podcast. I am the host of this podcast. The goal of this show is to create valuable content to broaden your knowledge, inspire you to act, and get you in the right mindset so you can apply it in your own life to drive impact, generate meaning, and achieve your purpose. I'm extremely excited about today's episode guest. His name is Dr. Michael Bruce. Michael is a double board certified clinical psychologist and clinical sleep specialist. He is one of only 168 psychologists in the world to have taken and passed the sleep medicine boards without going to medical school. That's quite impressive. Michael is also the author of four books, with the newest book published in 2021, Energize, Go From Dragging Ass to Kicking It in 30 Days. And he adds in it the concepts of movement, which is different from exercise, and also intermittent fasting to his already famous sleep chronotype. And he was recently named one of the top, his books is one of the top books by the Today Show. In his third book, published in 2017, The Power of When, which is a groundbreaking biohacking book, proving that there is a perfect time to do everything based on your biological chronotype. Michael gives the reader the exact time to have sex, run a mile, eat a cheeseburger, buy, sell, and ask your boss for a raise, and much more based on over 200 research studies. Michael, let's check in. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Gunn. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate your time and presence with us. You know, just a little bit of background for my audience. So Michael and I, we met at a hike through a group called METAL, which stands for
Musicians, Entertainers, Technology, Artists, and Leaders.
Perfect. And I'm having you do it because I'm a recent new member. So, and it is a great group of just brothers connecting with each other, folks that are highly successful in their arena. And so that's where we met. And I decided to have Michael on the show because he has years and experience in sleep medicine. And I wanted to invite Michael on the show to speak to us a little bit about how we can improve our sleep habits drive our life. So Michael, first of all, how did you get into this work?
So, you know, it's an interesting question. People always ask, like, did you have a sleep disorder or did somebody in your family not sleep well? Nope, none of the above. So it was 100% serendipitous. Like, I wasn't looking to get into sleep at all. In fact, I was interested in sports psychology. I was getting my PhD. And when you get a PhD in clinical psychology, you do what's called a residency. So it's like a year-long practice, very similar to what an MD does, to kind of take what you learned in school and put it into the field, right? And so I wanted to go to this really awesome sports psychology internship/residency. But to be honest with you, Kong, I couldn't get in. It was one of the top ones. Only the people went to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, you know, those kind of schools. I went to the University of Georgia. It was a top 20 program, but it wasn't Harvard, right? But they had a sleep track during this residency where they had gotten a grant, and they were saying, if anybody would be interested in spending half of their residency learning about sleep, then you can basically do whatever you want the other half. And I was like, aha, this is what I'm going to do. And so I applied for the sleep track. And it turns out that I was actually highly qualified because I worked in the electrophysiology department at the university. So I like to take apart machines and put them back together. And these machines are machines that can measure bodily signals. So like EKG machines, EEG machines. Turns out that's what you use in the sleep lab. So I already knew how to use all the stuff. And so I figured once I got there, I would just transfer as soon as I got there, right? Go into the sports psych program. Because just because you don't let me in the front door doesn't mean I'm not going to be in your program. It just means you haven't figured out yet that I'm coming in anyway, right? So I go, I apply, I get in, I show up, and it was in the University of Mississippi Medical Center in Jackson, Mississippi. I'm from Sandy Springs, Georgia. So it was like old home week for me, right? So I get there, raise my hand the first day, and I'm like, hey, I'm Dr. Bruce. I'd like to transfer. They're like, yep, we had a feeling you were going to do that, Michael. So they said, here's the deal. You got to stay for 6 months. And then after that, you can go wherever you want. I'm like, how tough can this be? So I started my rotation, literally, Kong, by the third day, I absolutely fell in love with clinical sleep medicine, and I knew I was never going to go anywhere else. I help people that fast sometimes. Like, literally, it's unbelievable. Like, if you're a clinical psychologist and you're out there in the field, it could take weeks, months, even years before you see anybody get any treatment gains, you know, like with depression or anxiety or things. Bro, I literally change people's lives overnight, sometimes in 24, 48 hours. Like, that's really cool. Like, it's super fun. I have so much fun doing it. Obviously, I have a lot of passion for it. And it really works. And so once I started to get involved and interested in sleep, it just, everything seemed so interesting. I just kept going.
Right. You know, one of the advice that you gave me during the hike, you said, just make sure that you're on a consistent sleeping schedule. And since that conversation, I've implemented into my sleep.
Awesome.
The next day, literally, and have been consistent, you know, since then. And I've noticed that, you know, I'm more alert and more aware. And I was just like, holy cow, like, this is amazing. Because
isn't it?
My schedule is like off and on. Like, I'm a night owl, but sometimes I sleep at 10. Other nights I sleep at midnight.
So I know, bro. Consistent.
And so when I took your advice, I was just like, holy cow, like, this is just amazing. And it doesn't take a genius to figure this out. I mean, just make sure that you set an alarm. If that's what you told me, send a reminder to go to sleep. Don't have screen time, like two hours beforehand or something like that.
About 90 minutes.
90 minutes, yeah. And I've just been like, holy cow, like, this is like I just discovered like my secret superpower, I feel like. That's so awesome.
I love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Well, and here's the point, Kong, is that it is that simple sometimes, right? Is sometimes it's making a very small change. A lot of people think, oh gosh, if I go to a sleep coach or a sleep doctor, oh my, they're going to ruin my life. They're going to make me go to bed at 9 o'clock. They're going to make me wake up at 6 o'clock. Nothing could be further from the truth. Okay. Let's just kind of get it out there. There's some very straightforward, simple things that anybody can do to improve their overall sleep quality. Like, again, so when we were on the hike together, one of the things I told you was have a regularized sleep schedule. Now we can get even more detailed, and I can tell people, look, here's the one thing. If you listen to this entire podcast and you only get one thing from me, here's the nugget. Okay. Wake up at the same time, 7 days a week, right? Notice I didn't say go to bed. I said wake up, okay? And here's why. When you wake up, it sets your circadian rhythm, and your circadian rhythm deals with over 300 functions in your body, okay? Mm-hmm. It deals with digestion. It deals with sleep. It deals with hormonal balance. It deals with mood. It deals with pain. I mean, the list goes on and on. So if your circadian rhythm is in sync, meaning it knows what to do every day because it's doing the same thing at the same time, everything gets better. Your body becomes more efficient, right? It becomes more efficient in sleep, becomes more efficient in digestion, becomes more efficient in mood regulation, all of the above. And so our bodies, this unit that we're walking around in for a while, is really tuned up well if we're consistent.
Yeah, that's, I get it. Does it matter if a person works first shift, second shift, third shift?
It does. So shift work. So let's do real quick a little thing about shift work. Shift work is not good for your health. All right. There's a lot of research to show this, especially the night shift or the late shift. Like for people who work 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., higher suicide, higher cancer, poor immune function, higher depression, like all of that stuff happens there. And here's why. Our bodies were not meant to sleep when it's light out. Our bodies were meant to sleep when it's dark out. And so when you're trying to do the opposite, your body is going to have a reaction. And here's the thing to remember. Some people are a little bit better at it than other people, right? So as an example, I think when we were on the hike, I described to you that I'm a night owl. Like I don't ever go to bed before midnight type of thing, right? Well, I might be a person who could be good for shift work because I don't get tired. You see what I'm saying, right? Yeah. Like I don't get tired until late. So maybe working late could be a not a bad idea for me. So understanding what your body is best at and then trying to match your body to the shift is usually the best way to go about doing it. Now, let's be fair, and I won't drag on too much longer, but let's be fair. What if you can't change your shift? And what if you need your job, right? And what if the night shift pays double? Because most of the time it does. It either pays time and a half or double. And so financially, it makes a lot of sense. Okay, totally understand that. But you still have to have a life, right? So you've got a family, you might have kids, spouse, partner, whatever, right? You've still got to be able to work all of those things. So what we try to do is we try to educate people to understand when to go to bed after their shift, when to go get up, those types of things. And it's actually quite interesting because you would play it out almost exactly like it was a normal day. So when you get home from work, you don't go to bed immediately because in the daytime, you wouldn't do that, right? So then you spend a little time in the morning with your family, get a little of that light, then start to move into a dimmer environment. Then we put you into a pitch black room so your body can fall asleep. You may even have to take something called melatonin, which is a hormone that can help people sleep who are on the shift work. I want to be clear about something. I'm not a proponent of melatonin other than in three cases: with shift work, with jet lag, and with people who have a melatonin deficiency. This is not something that people should just go running around taking because it can actually affect your other medications. And many people don't know that. Mm-hmm. So back to the shift work idea, there's a lot of different things that people can do. And it is a growing science. But the good news is I think you can still get a pretty decent night's sleep if you try.
So going back to the melatonin deficiency, how do we know if we have that? Is there like a certain test that you can recommend for my?
There is. So here's what's interesting about melatonin deficiencies is you personally can actually solve that issue yourself. You can go online and you can order a melatonin saliva test. So what this is you'll get four tubes and you'll basically spit into the tubes. And so what happens is you do one in the morning, one at night, then you go to sleep, and then one when you wake up, and then one right before you go to bed again. And what it does is it measures melatonin and something called cortisol. And that will let us know, because melatonin is only supposed to be high at certain times and then it's supposed to be low at other times. Same with cortisol, but they're opposite. So as an example, when you wake up, your cortisol is high, your melatonin should be low. When you go to sleep, your cortisol should be low and your melatonin should be high. That's why we take the readings and we can kind of see across a 24-hour period. It costs about $100-$120, I think, to do it. I've done it a couple of times myself, and it's fairly accurate in terms of learning that. Let's say you discover, hey, I'm not producing melatonin when I'm supposed to. What do I do then? Okay, number one, don't try to do this by yourself. Talk to a sleep specialist. Not your general doctor, a sleep specialist, because I'm going to tell you something right now. There's very few general doctors out there who know shit about melatonin. Okay. So like, don't even bother. Like that's what we learn about in sleep school, as it were. Now there are some naturopathic doctors and some functional medicine doctors that do a great job of learning a lot of that stuff as well. So I don't want to say nobody knows about it other than sleep specialists, but again, look at the source at which you're doing this. Right. Couple things to think about. If you're going to take a melatonin pill or tablet, it takes almost 90 minutes for it to take an effect. So you need to take it before 90 minutes you want to go to bed. So if your bedtime is 11, you'd be taking it at 9:30. Mm. Here's the rub. If you take it in a liquid form, sublingually, it only takes 30 minutes to go up and in. So you would take, so knowing what the format is of the melatonin becomes important. That's number one. Number two, dose. There's doses all over the place. In fact, 95% of the available melatonin is in an overdosage format. The right dose, based on the data out of MIT, is somewhere between 0.5 and 1.5 milligrams. I can't find it anything but 3s, 5s, even 10 milligrams in some of these gummies and shit like that. It's a mess.
Yeah, actually, so I've been taking melatonin recently, and I take one pill every night, and it's 10 milligram. So,
bro, you're taking 10 times the recommended dose. Are you having weird dreams?
I don't know. I mean, I don't remember my dreams, but I...
Okay, well, that's good. The number one sign for melatonin overdose is super vivid dreams. One other thing just to be careful on, and you should back down on your melatonin. If you're taking 10, take 5 for the next 5 nights, then go down to 3 for the next 5 nights, and then go down to 1.5, because that's where you need to be. Just so slowly taper yourself. Otherwise, your brain's not going to know what's going on. So you need to, again, slowly, don't ever cold turkey anything. It's a bad idea. The other big thing to talk about with melatonin is kids and melatonin. Okay. I want to be very clear. Children do not need melatonin, period. Okay. There's only one group of kids that might, and I'll explain why in just a second. Really interesting data. Children produce almost 4 times the amount of melatonin that they actually need. But here's the problem is there's many, many pediatricians who you go to them because your child isn't sleeping particularly well. And they say, oh, give them some melatonin. They'll be fine. Mm. Now you have a pill problem and a sleep problem. And you've taught a child that they need to take a pill in order to sleep. I think that's a bad precedent to set. And I don't think it's necessary. However, there is one group where melatonin is actually important for kids, and that's in kids on the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. It's been some really interesting data, believe it or not, at 3 and 5 milligrams, which again is a whopping dose. Those kids seem to do exceptionally well with melatonin. We think they may have deficiencies based on some of the genetics of their autism, but it's very early stage in terms of that research. But we do know it works in them. But again, no melatonin for kids. Keep it on the lower side for adults. And the other thing that a lot of people don't know is it affects antidepressants, diabetes medication, and high blood pressure medication, because it's a circadian pacemaker. So what it does is it basically moves it to another time zone, if you will. That's not too good if you're on blood pressure pills, right?
Well, that's good to know. I mean, I'm sure there's probably, you know, a few listeners that have one or all of that. So
yeah,
thanks for keeping us on track. What's your take on coffee? Does it work? Does it not? Mm-hmm. For me personally, I've been drinking it for, I don't know, maybe a decade off and on. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But should I just not take it? I mean, should people take it if it works for them? I mean, what's your
So take? Here's the thing is there is no nutritional need for caffeine. Okay. None. Right. There's no reason why your body needs to have caffeine. I get it. It's a stimulant and it can be very helpful. It can be helpful for attention, for focus, helpful for energy, things of that nature. If you can avoid caffeine, I would argue that it's probably the biggest, what we call insulter of sleep. It's probably the biggest enemy of sleep is caffeine, more so than alcohol, believe it or not. We'll talk about that next. But what's interesting about caffeine is it stays in your system so damn long. So people don't know this, but caffeine has a half-life of between 6 and 8 hours, which means 50% is still in your system approximately 8 hours after you drink it.
Wow.
Right. So if you drink coffee at 2 p.m., half of it is still there at 10 p.m. Wow. Right? Yeah. So it starts to make sense why caffeine is a big problem. Here's another statistic that I just learned that I thought was really quite fascinating, is I looked up what's called the quarter life of a substance. So the quarter life is when 25% is left. Here's the crazy part. For caffeine, it's 12 hours. So if you drink 3 cups, let's say you drink 4 cups of coffee throughout the morning, like till noon, roughly midnight, one of those cups, it's like you literally just drank it.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, so you can't sleep then. That's just, that is just, you know, that's, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, so, it's unbelievable.
So for those folks that are, is there such thing as people getting used to coffee? And that it's just...
Yeah, absolutely. So people do habituate to caffeine all the time. That's not an uncommon scenario at all. Also, one of the other things that we see is some people are not affected by caffeine. So I'll tell you a crazy story. So my physician, the woman who takes care of me, she would tell me, she'd be like, hey, Michael, I need to let you know I have an espresso every night before I go to bed. I'm like, Carrie, what are you doing? You're killing me. I'm the sleep doctor here. And she was like, caffeine doesn't affect me. And I'm like, bullshit. Okay. Caffeine affects everybody. And she said, no, really, it doesn't affect me. So we actually did an enzyme study on her. It turns out she does not produce the enzymes that metabolize caffeine. So it literally flies right through her system. So there are some people, believe it or not, that caffeine has almost no effect on. So So that in and of itself, I thought was quite fascinating. But as a general guideline, here's what I tell people. Stop caffeine by 2 p.m. as a place to start, okay? Do that for 2 or 3 weeks, see how you do. Then stop caffeine by noon, okay? So after 3 months, move it back to noon. Then after 3 months, move it back to 9 a.m. Then if you can basically have your coffee between 8 and 9 and have that be the only time, you're probably in great, great shape in terms of your sleep. One other thing about caffeine is when should you start it versus when should you stop it is always an interesting question. Right. So I want to break that down for a second if we can. So people don't realize it, but sleep in and of itself is a dehydrative event, meaning that when you sleep, you lose moisture through the humidity just in your breath. Okay, almost a liter of water, almost a liter of water comes out of your system. So when you wake up in the morning, if you slug a couple cups of coffee, remember caffeine's a diuretic, makes you have to pee. You're already dehydrated. You're just gonna make the situation worse, okay? But if you drink water first, so hydrate before you caffeinate. So number one, when you wake up in the morning, do three things. Sit on the edge of your bed, and take 15 deep breaths. Okay, just to bring yourself present, right? And to be able to wake up your respiratory system. Number two, drink 15 ounces of water. And then number three, go outside and get 15 minutes of sunshine. Okay, that turns off the melatonin faucet in your head and starts your day. Now you are in a very cold environment as we were talking about before. So if you can't get outside for 15 minutes, it's okay to go by the window and get some sunlight by the window for 15 minutes here, okay? So once you hydrate, now you wait 90 minutes after you woke up. So if you woke up at 6:30, your first cup of coffee is at 8 o'clock. Because what's happened is, so in order to pull your brain out of a state of unconsciousness, you need two hormones, cortisol and adrenaline, and they're both pretty high. So what happens is when you wake up, you've got adrenaline and cortisol running around in your brain. When you add caffeine, here's the thing. If you look at adrenaline and cortisol versus caffeine, it's like looking at cocaine versus weak tea. Okay. So I've got basically cocaine running around your brain in terms of adrenaline and cortisol. Adding a little caffeine isn't going to do good. But 90 minutes later, all of those hormones begin to subside. Then when you bring caffeine in, it actually lifts them up and you get a bigger bang for your buck. So in summary, I know I said a lot there, so I'm going to summarize real quick. Number one, from the time you wake up, wait 90 minutes before you have your first cup of coffee and stop all coffee if you can by 2 p.m.
Okay. Question about the lighting. So natural lighting, better or worse than—
Better, always.
Of course, natural lighting is always better. Superficial, artificial lighting. Like if you can't get, let's say Minnesota where I'm currently at, I mean, sometimes we don't even have sunlight. It's like, cause it's always—
Right.
So when people wake up, should they just like turn on the lights at home?
100%. So here's the good news is you can actually buy a commercially available light box. They run about $100 on Amazon. My favorite is called the Go Light, G-O-L-I-T-E. I have no affiliation with them whatsoever. But I like that one. I travel with that one quite a bit because it's very, very helpful for me. And or if I'm in like New York and it's like the dead of winter and I have to be up at like 5:30 to be on, you know, like on the Today Show or whatever, that's where you can use that artificial light. And they make these light boxes, which basically re-engineers the sunlight into a small format that's really good for your eyes. They even make visors that have it on there and things like that now. So there's really some pretty cool stuff out there for light therapy. But when you wake up in the morning, the best thing that you can do, honestly, is watch the sunrise. So if you happen to get up just before the sun rises, if you can go outside, again, not in the super cold, but actually watching the sun rise is actually very healthy for your eyeballs, because it slowly kind of kicks everything into gear and then it kind of gets in there. And now you're getting that full dose of blue light, which again, turns off that melatonin faucet in your brain.
That's beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. That's
amazing.
Naps. What's your take on naps? Is that useful? Is it not? When should we take naps?
I am a big fan of napping. However, if you have insomnia, you should never nap. Because what happens is you pull away some sleep drive during the day and you're already having a hard time sleeping at night. You really don't want to add to your troubles. But as a general guideline, I don't mind people napping. I'll be clear though, you shouldn't need a nap every day. Okay. Like if you find you need a nap every day, there's a quality problem with your sleep at night. Or you just ain't getting enough sleep at night, okay? So that's number one. But number two, I love naps. Saturday afternoon watching golf. Are you kidding me? Like, that's it. I'm done. Game over, right? I mean, it's perfect. So I totally understand that whole aspect of it, but just understand like the purpose of the nap, right? So like, what are you trying to accomplish here? For some people, actually, NASA did a really interesting study. They discovered that just 7 minutes of eyes closed was actually rejuvenative. You didn't even have to necessarily fall asleep. So just time out can be very, very helpful. And to be fair, I recommend that people take a time out almost every day, not necessarily a nap, mind you, right? But maybe you can do a quick meditation, maybe just a quick like stillness, something to just kind of bring you in and pull away from all the stimulation.
So speaking of meditation, how can people be more centered? I suppose, I don't know if the word is spiritual, more in alignment with themselves, considering we live in a world that's so fast paced and we're inundated with just technology and all news and everything. It could be overwhelming for the layperson.
Oh, yeah.
What do you recommend for the average person to do to be more centered?
So here's the thing about spirituality, meditation, feeling centered, feeling present, right? They're all interesting ideas and things like that. There's no right or wrong. That's number one. Number two, pick something that sounds kind of interesting and give it a shot. So I call this the habit of the month club, right? And so when I was trying to learn more about meditation and spirituality, I found several different tools, different types of one thing, meditation, one was breath work, one was relaxation exercise. I didn't want to do them all at once because you'd never know what would work and what wouldn't work. And so I decided the beginning of each month, I'd try a new one, right? And see what worked for me. And to be fair, meditation was a hard one for me. I had a lot of struggles for years trying to get meditation kind of down. I actually had to get, I got a piece of hardware. It's actually, I got it right here. It's called Muse. It's a headband. And you actually wear it and it gives you real-time EEG data and tells you as you're getting to this meditative state. I have no affiliation with them either. It's awesome. I do this thing almost every day. And that was one of the things that kind of brought me there. But I want to be clear, like, you don't have to be a yogi. You don't have to be a swami. You don't have to be a meditation expert, okay? When I first started, I could get about 60 seconds in of meditation. Like, that was it before my mind was someplace else where I was thinking of a problem or things like that. Now, I can do 4 10-minute solid meditations, no interruptions, then a 5-minute gratitude meditation. I can do 45 minutes of meditation, no sweat now. Honestly, I couldn't get 30 seconds when I started. So I don't want people to get discouraged, but I do want to say, give it a shot for a month. Try it every day for a month, because that's kind of what it had to do for me, was I had to try things and I couldn't just give up after 2 or 3 times. You know, I had to like give it a shot. And that's really how I built my spiritual practice. And I would argue also that your morning routine is a great place to begin that meditative spirituality for your day. I find immediately after I wake up, that's one of the best times for me to meditate. I don't mind meditating in bed, because I've already slept, so I don't feel sleepy. I feel present. The problem with meditating in bed for a lot of people is they get so tired and relaxed, they're sleep deprived, and so they fall asleep, right? That's really not what meditation is meant for, right? Meditation is meant to put you to sleep. It's meant to bring you present. So I tell people, try and do it after you've been well slept, because that can be a great place to start.
Yeah. Speaking of sleep and meditation, my senior year of college, I took a mindfulness class and our final was to meditate for an hour. And I was not one of the students that fell asleep, but it was hard. It was,
right.
I thought that I was going to, enroll in this class. It was just being easy. And it turns out to be one of the most difficult class, because I was like, how do you meditate by just sitting still? That's just crazy. Right. And there are some folks that when they do meditate, they tell me they're scared of their thoughts. They don't want to be alone.
Yeah. What's your advice? That happens a lot.
Yeah. What's your advice to those folks that don't want to go there?
So one of the things to remember when we're talking about meditation in particular now is that over the course of time, so number one, those thoughts are good. So thoughts aren't necessarily bad, right? And so those thoughts are good because there's something that's bubbling to the surface that your unconscious wants you to address, right? And so if every time you get into a meditative state, a theme seems to pop up, newsflash, you need to address that theme, whatever it is, okay? Because your brain is telling you, it's saying, look, I've taken all the stimulation out, right? We're just looking at the core. Here's what's popping. Mm-hmm. That whatever it is for you, that's the thing to start to really think about. So if you're getting negative thoughts or unwanted thoughts or things like that, here's the other thing you can do. Consider a meditative practice with a therapist, right? Mm-hmm. And so there are lots of therapists who use meditation as an induction technique before therapy to get people relaxed and then allow those thoughts to come forward. You don't have to handle this stuff by yourself. Handle it with a professional, right? And somebody like me, you know, who's a trained clinical psychologist, therapist, who can walk with you through this particular, you know, instance and then help you kind of look forward to those things. Because here's the thing, once you overcome it, it's in your past, bro. Like, you don't have to worry about it anymore. So let's dig in and help you.
Right. Yeah, that's good. I have a sister who just mentioned that too, that she's afraid of her thoughts. And so I didn't really know how to address that. And I did encourage her to get a therapist. So it's good information to know so that I can share that with her. And for folks that are listening to this, that would be very beneficial for them. Right. So going back to your earlier point about alcohol. So when should people drink alcohol?
Let's talk about it. So it turns out that alcohol is the number one sleep aid in the world. More people drink themselves to sleep than any other thing. And I'm going to be honest with you, it works, but it doesn't give you good quality sleep. Okay. Remember, there's a really big difference between passing out and going to bed. Okay. We don't like the passing out. We like the going to bed. Now, I also want to be clear. I like scotch. I like beer. And I don't mind having them at a meal or even after a meal. But looking at the timing and the amount of alcohol is really the key to understanding its effect on sleep. So the closer you drink to lights out and the more you drink closer to lights out, the bigger effect it has on your body. It takes the average human body approximately 1 hour to digest one alcoholic beverage. So here's a general guideline, okay? Is let's say you're having a meal and you want to have a glass of wine or a beer with dinner. I don't have a problem with that. Go for it. Let's say you want to have a second one. No problem. If you go past two, that's when the issue starts to come up because we've increased this amount at this point. And here's what happens is our old friend cortisol jumps back in the game. Because what happens is by the second drink, you're kind of catching a buzz, right? Which means, believe it or not, your brain is getting toxic. That's what the buzz is that it's actually killing brain cells because your brain is becoming toxic, okay? Mm-hmm. So what happens is your brain has an alarm system in there and it spikes cortisol to counteract these woozy, tipsy feelings that you get from alcohol. Well, now you're an energetic drunk trying to go to bed, right? With cortisol on board. Remember, cortisol and melatonin are opposing, right? So if you can, stop at two drinks and do what I call the one for one, which is one glass of water for each glass of alcohol and 1 hour for each glass of alcohol. So if you have two drinks, right? At dinner, you'll have two glasses of water and you'll need to wait 2 hours. If you have three drinks, which you shouldn't do, you'll have three glasses of water. You'll have to wait 3 hours. If you have over three drinks, you're passing out for sure.
Right. Well, it's a good thing I'm a lightweight. So after three sip, I'm like, I'm done. I'm ready for bed.
A lot of people, interestingly, I know we didn't bring this up as a topic, but a tangential topic to this is cannabis. Right. So I live in Los Angeles, where cannabis is legal recreationally and medicinally. And quite frankly, we're starting to see some very interesting data come out about cannabis and sleep and how effective it can be for sleep. Now, I want to be clear, CBD, it's not particularly effective for sleep. CBN is very effective for sleep. THC, which is the part that makes you feel high. It makes you feel pretty high, but it also relaxes you and allows the natural sleep process to take over. So I would argue you want a little bit of THC, you want some CBN. And the reason you want CBD is because CBD does two things that CBN and THC don't do, which is reduce inflammation, which helps with pain and also helps with anxiety. And those are the two biggest factors that I find that people have when they have insomnia. They either have anxiety about going to sleep, or they have pain, which is preventing them from sleep. And CBD does a good job of helping with those. and then the sleep process can take over. But I want to be clear, you have to drink almost 120 milligrams of CBD, which is like a whole bottle, to get any somnolific effects from CBD.
Wow. That's that's a lot.
A lot of data.
Is there a difference between how you ingest it?
Yeah. So look, I'm a doctor, so I'm not going to sit here and say vaping is a good idea, because it's not. All right. So I prefer the tinctures. I'm not a big fan of the gummies, and I'll explain why. Number one, they're loaded with sugar. But number two, it's very difficult to, in suspension, get the amount of whatever it is you want into the gummy. So what ends up happening is one gummy has got 3 milligrams of THC and one gummy might have 8 milligrams. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not easy to dose in a gummy, but with a liquid in suspension, there's a lot of data to show that that is working quite well. So I recommend what are called tinctures or dropper bottles with some of those products in them.
Got it. Noted.
I can't say vaping or smoking because I'm a doctor, you know.
Yeah, I get it. So during our hike, you mentioned a topic that is concerning to many of us, especially after COVID. During COVID and after COVID is the issue of mental health.
Oh, yeah.
What's your take on the current state of mental health? How can we help people get to a better state?
Here's what I can tell you is in relationship to sleep. Here's kind of what the data would suggest. I would argue 75% of insomnia is either anxiety or depression. Easily. And I would argue that we are in some of the most anxious and depressing times I've ever seen in my life. I'm 54 years old and I've never seen the world the way it is today. I mean, I'm sure people have said that for 100 years, but it really feels stressful to me now with just the divisiveness between things and war and the financial insanity that's going on. I mean, to be fair, I think everybody's anxious or depressed, and I think that's having a marked effect on their sleep. Also, therapy is hard to find these days. Finding good therapists is not easy. Also, they're now running out of the medications in some instances in different states. So it's really important for people to really think through their mental health. And I would argue, and I know I'm a little biased, sleep is easily one of the biggest factors in mental health that you can easily control and help your mental health, right? So going to bed and waking up on a regularized schedule is going to do nothing but help your depression, help your anxiety. All of those things will compound in the positive for you. So I would argue that if you're not getting great sleep now and you have very irregular moods and things of that nature, again, just going to bed and waking up at the same time for 3 weeks, you will be shocked at how much better you feel.
How many hours do you recommend the average person to sleep?
So it's a great question, and it's not the same for everyone. I am a 6 to 6.5 hour sleeper, and I'm 54 years old. I go to bed at midnight. I wake up at 6:15. I fall asleep naturally, and I wake up naturally. That's what my body does, right? And so I just respect my body. I've had no coffee today. This is my level of energy all the time. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, almost 5 here, right? And so this is kind of where I'm at. So for me, that's kind of where I kind of flow things through with people.
For me, I mean, 6.5, I need like probably 7 to 8 hours in order to be like to operate.
Yeah, the National Sleep Foundation says somewhere between 7 and 9 is kind of the general range or guideline. Again, I think if you're consistent and you follow something called your chronotype, which is a genetic predetermined sleep schedule, early bird, night owl, those kind of things, you'll be surprised at how efficient your sleep gets.
And where do people find that? Like, how do they get
the... Oh, sure. We can put it in the show notes, but if you go to chronoquiz.com, chronoquiz.com, it takes 3 minutes. And I'll tell you the best time of day to have sex, eat a cheeseburger, drink a cup of coffee, fall asleep, the whole thing.
Is there a good time to take the quiz too?
That's a great question. Nobody's ever asked me that. Oh my gosh, that is such a good question. You can take the quiz anytime.
Just 3 minutes.
Only 3 minutes, bro.
Michael, this has been such a pleasure. I know we're about that time, and I want to be respectful of your time. Are there any advice you'd like to share with my audience? And where can people find you should they choose to connect with you?
Sure. Well, you know, we've been talking a lot about sleep, and the topic of your podcast has to do with purpose. Sure. And what is your purpose and where is your purpose? And I have a purpose story I want to tell everyone that has nothing to do with sleep, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's great. Let's do it.
So my grandfather passed away when he was 103 and 10 months. Okay. And very old, very in great health. He was on one blood pressure pill when he died. And he didn't die from anything physical. He died from lack of purpose. So let me tell you the story. So my grandfather would walk every day to the synagogue. He was the president of his synagogue, and he had a little job to do. At 103, he was walking every day to the synagogue. And one day he tripped and he fell, and he was too old. He couldn't raise himself back up. And so he was there for about 25 minutes until somebody found him, lifted him up, and then brought him back over to where he needed to go. And the synagogue said, "We love you, but we can't have you do this any longer because it's too big of a risk." Mm-hmm. 6 months later, he was dead.
Wow. That's
purpose. It will drive everything 100%. You can't figure out what your purpose is when you're too tired and you're miserable and you're stressed out and you're doing all those things. And so for me, I've been very fortunate. My purpose has been it was a gift to me. My purpose was to help people sleep. And to find ways to educate people to do that. And my grandfather taught me that at a very young age, because one of my other lessons from my grandfather was, he said, "Michael, you only spend money on three things: eyeglasses, shoes, and mattresses." And so, you know, he had a thing for sleep, even back in the day. So purpose is, I can't explain how important it is. But what I can tell you all is it is, I would argue, the single driving force to life.
Yeah. You're correct. And I'm in alignment with that. That's the whole reason why I decided to launch this podcast, is to inspire people to, of course, show up authentically and be the best version of themselves in whatever capacity, format, or way they know how. And so, I'm so happy that, you know, you're able to find your true calling and make an impact in society. And I can't thank you enough for sharing your insight on my podcast, and, you know, spreading the tools and practices that, the average person can easily implement in their daily habits to improve their sleep and also their mental health. I think there's a lot of just things in the world that we're so focused on, and we have to take care of ourselves. And what you're doing is really making a great impact in society by encouraging people to take care of themselves mentally, physically, and really by simply just, you know, keeping track of their habits, and ensuring that they're on the right trajectory to perform better, and that's getting enough sleep and a good quality of sleep. So, and where can people find you should they choose to connect? Do you have a website?
Sure. So I have a website. You don't even have to write it down. TheSleepDoctor.com. You'll never forget it. I have the same handle on all my socials. So Facebook, Twitter, TikTok. We're doing some fun TikTok videos out there. If people want to check me out on TikTok as well, we're always putting out new information and new content. So swing on by.
Awesome. Well, Michael, it's been a joy having you on. Folks, if you like this episode, please like this episode and subscribe, and make sure to follow Michael and reference that you discover him through the Purpose Tune podcast. Until then, take care. Thank you. Sweet.